Session number 10798, Reel 3.
Mr. Bradshaw, Reel 3?
Yeah, of course, the Fleet Signal officer called me a bloody fool for picking up prisoners when I was doing a good job, as he thought. But anyway, we decided that we would make our way. But after marching for about half the day or a day, I decided to even up the odds as 3-1. It didn't seem reasonable to me, and I asked these... it was a naval surgeon, one of them. I told him to take the boots off, and the other two who were with him, and promptly thrown them into the bay, which seemed to make the odds better for me, although I was rather sorry for them later on when I saw the feet were bleeding. But anyway, that was too late now. We'd get on our way. But we walked through the day, and the following night, rested quite a lot and on the way because they couldn't walk very far. And then on the second night, we were walking along when suddenly the voice came out of the darkness and said, "Halt, who's over there?" We'd actually gone through the Senegalese lines and into our own lines. Of course, we've then proceeded into the Diego Suarez, which had been taken by then. And I handed them over, and I apologised to them. They went into the cage with the rest of the prisoners there. I had a signal to report on board the Ramillies to the Fleet Signal Officer. Immediately I returned. He said, "Just put your gear somewhere in charge of someone and come directly to the boat. The boat to pick you up will be at the jetty, and I want to see you." So I was covered in this red sand dust that's in Madagascar. It looked like very bronze, dirty looking so-and-so with his white eyes and everything. But anyway, I thought, all right, I'll go as I am. A khaki shirt and... I wasn't in filthy state, actually. But anyway, I went down. When I got down to the boat, I said to the fellow, the coxswain of this boat, I said, "Is he Ramillies?" So he says, "Yes." He says, "Are you the bloke we've got to take back?" I said, "Well, I've got a signal to say I've got to repair on board to see the Fleet Signal Officer." He said, "That's it." So anyway, I got on and went to the Ramillies. Anyway, I was met on board by the Fleet Signal Officer, who took me down to his cabin and gave me a bottle of beer. So he wasn't all that mad, did he? He said, "Now, first of all, I want you to write out a full report of what's happened while you've been ashore and everything else, of how the bombardment went that you did, and all the other details." He said, "And the Admiral, Admiral Seyfert was on board. He wants to see you." So I saw Admiral Seyfert, and he congratulated me on doing an excellent job. And he said, "I've actually put you in for an award." And in fact, he'd put me in for the... I later heard from the Fleet Signal Officer, he'd put me in for the Conspicuous Gallantry Medal. But I got the Distinguished Service Medal instead. And anyway, the outcome of that, of course, I was recommended for a commission as well. But in between, after all this had happened, of course, we then did the other landings in Madagascar. Went from Diego Suarez to Talia. I've forgotten the names of these places on either side of Madagascar. There was four landings there due to clear the island up. Then with that, number six commandos I was really attached to, they were sent back, and I picked up with number 29 Brigade on to Burma.
What's happened in Burma?
Well, in Burma, of course, I kicked off training some Indians at the Royal Indian Signal School to start with into combined ops procedures, and the young telegraphers had done the basic training, or half it, to bring them up to some sort of standard to be useful for beach parties and that. And eventually I left those. I went up to Burma we took a train from Bombay to Pune, about 6 days to Calcutta, which was a beautiful trip insofar as it was just a train, non-corridor, of very hard seats, with a toilet every now and again, which meant that with a load of sailors and soldiers on board this thing, they were continually going to the open door and having a pee outside or dropping the trousers and doing one as well, you know, as we were going along. But I remember breaking my neck to get to the toilet one place. And we'd just come into this station. We could tell we were going to stop because, I mean, shuddering every time. When it stopped, I saw this brick wall with these two figures on and realised straight away there was a toilet there. And, of course, I dashed in this place. And, of course, Indian footprints, toilet thing. I dashed in there. I just stood there. I stood there and a woman walked in. And she squatted on the next one. So I thought, fair enough, missus. I'll relieve myself as well here. I just made out I was waiting for a number 19 bus and finished what I was doing. She didn't seem to bother. Anyway, eventually we got to Chittagong and to Akiab and Mitakina, all these other places. And eventually I went across. We got shot up one day by hurricanes of our own force crossing the Irrawaddy River on one of these jobs. I was more or less used for spotting then for long-range bombardments, going with big units then. But we went off on one spell and we were walking along and through the jungle and clearings and all the rest of it. Bang, 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 and a lot of explosions going on all around me, and I felt my boot get wet and I found I got a bullet in my leg. Just there.
In your calf.
And it just missed my shin. You know, one of these Japanese bullets, you know, they use a small bullet. I thought there was something like a 2.2 that they were using. They didn't seem very big. Anyway, it did cause me no discomfort then until we got picked up by Japanese. All these troops that we'd been with, there must have been about 100 of us all together, but, of course, they'd all backed off and we'd sort of bedded down, two of us, and sort of waited to, you know, to move on or back or what, not realising that they retired and retired without her. So then when we...
You mean you were captured by the Japanese?
Yeah. So, of course, when we stood up, we then found that there was all Japanese around us. Anyway, they took us back, you know, marched us down. By then I was limping, I was a bit painful. And eventually we put on a lorry. And taken in this lorry, and we must have gone down to Prome, a place called Prome. And I think it was either Barmo or Prome we went to. Anyway, they had a holding camp there, and there were a lot of Australians and soldiers, sailors, all sorts in there, a lot there. And I got these... I was wearing a bush hat. I hadn't even got a tin hat. I was wearing these bush hats then. Royal Naval flashers on, usual thing. Of course, these soldiers said, by Prome, of course, is a long way inland. But we were a long way inland up the Irrawaddy River where we were operating from, you see. So it was normal, really, to see some sailors there. The landing craft were there. But when you get down to Prome and Barmo, you're a long way inland. And these soldiers say, God, you blokes will be after the chop. Bloody Navy, what are you doing? So I said, well, we're working with the artillery. You wouldn't have a job on. Anyway, we were interrogated by, I don't know, a lieutenant or a captain or something. And, you know, he asked his usual question, what are you doing? And he looked, he says, you're a Navy? I said, yes, I'm Royal Naval Telegraphist and I'm working with the Army. What do you do with the Army? I said, well, I work my radio, whatever the Army say, I'll do that. Anyway, he questioned that. And eventually, while I was stood there, there was one Japanese, he had a prong on his rifle, you know. When it's time to go, I wasn't sure what they were talking, you know, couldn't understand half the lingo that was going on at the time. And this bloke puts his bayonet and gives my balls a little twitch, you know. And, oh, God, I've only just got married, leave us alone. Anyway, what he wanted me was to turn around and go out after this interview and that. And, of course, we went into this compound with these other, and, of course, they put the fear of Christ into us. So I said to one of these blokes, I said, oh, sod this. I'm going over the bloody wall. I'm not stopping here. And he said, oh, don't do that. He said, they don't pick you up twice, you know, they shoot you a second time. I said, it looks like they're going to shoot me anyway. Anyway, we were in from being hit and caught to leaving, going out that night, it must have been around about a week, probably 5 or 6 days. You know, time didn't make much difference from then on. But we went out. The two of us went out. We immediately lost the other bloke. I don't know where he got to. And I thought, well, from where I am, if I go north towards Naga Hills, you know, on that, and make my way up along the base of the Naga Hills, I should be out of the main fighting and probably better country for walking. So I made my way to the Norad, you know, towards the Naga Hills, and I just kept walking. Well, walking in Burma is not a very pleasant thing, because first of all, it is not a lot to eat. And what you've got to eat, mainly bananas, breadfruit, stuff like that. But water, now and again there was rivers and streams, but mainly there's a lot of pools in the jungle. The dew ponds, they are. They could have dew ponds. And of course, it didn't look very appetising to start with, but after a couple of days with nothing to drink, first time I got to one of these dew ponds covered with little white flowers and green leaves and that, and I opened this thing, little thing up there. I got a hand, you know, little bugs flying in and out of it, you know, these, what do you call them, water...
Beetles.
Water fleas or something like that they call. Anyway, I got a handful. I thought, well, I just filtered it until I got home, drank that. And, you know, kept doing that. But, of course, it didn't work very well, because after a few days, I found that my bowels were working on their own, all down the back. I was in shorts as well, all down the back of my leg, covered in thick cake and that. And, of course, I'd got amoebic dysentery. That's what I'd got. And amoebic dysentery, you know, it's depressing. I don't say depressing, I'm not really depressed, I wanted to live. But it has an energy sagging thing, you know. But anyway, I kept walking, and eventually I must have been on the road from... It was about September, and this was around about the end of May, end of beginning of June when I was taken. So,
which year is this?
Hmm?
Which year?
This would be 1943.
June 1943.
From about May, end of May, beginning of June, to the beginning of September, and then. By then, I'd walked my way along, as I thought, the Naga Hills, where I'd come back inland, and I was eventually picked up near Mitikina by our own people. Well, of course, by then I was walking, you know, not very happy, but I was doing all right. I got back anyway. I got picked up by our own troops.
Had you got any help from any Burmese people on the way?
No, I kept clear of all those. I was frightened to believe in death day or two. Really frightened. But when I got back, our own troops, of course, they'd put me into a field hospital to start with and given me emetine injection, sticking the bloody needle in your backside with this emetine. In the meantime, my wife had received a telegram. Of course, I say that I was missing, presumed gone for a chop, dead and whatnot. So she wasn't very happy. And anyway, by then, of course, by September time, randomly, it must have been about September time, because I got back, I went up to a place called Peshmari in central India to a hospital and rest camp there where they built me up a bit and said, all right, you're fit for travelling. Sent me down to Bombay. I was still troubled by this dysentery all the way there, not feeling very well. And they put me on board of... Of course, you repatriated immediately, coming back, see. So they put me on board the vessel called the Sakatia, And on the Sikasi, rather surprised me, there was a lot of escaped prisoners. There's a lot of them there. There are a lot of sick, you know, being invalided through loss of legs and loss of arms and all sorts of trouble. But there was quite a lot who had made it home. Anyway, when we got to Suez, had a nice trip on this boat, you know, and we got to Suez, and there's a crowd of doctors come on board, army doctors. And I've always thought that army doctors, they're in the army because they can't get a job as a civilian. Because they came on board and they examined us. I always remember this bloke saying, well, you're a lot better now than when you first put on board. You've got a bit more weight on. He says, and really, before you get home, he says, I think you'd be better off to stop in the Mediterranean and get built up before you. The Mediterranean climate will do you well to good. In fact, what he meant was, we're short of bloody troops for Italy, because the next thing I knew was on another boat to Sicily, and the bloke says, yeah, that's your boat, LCH-282, refit it. And I knew back, I was back in combined ops, I wasn't on my way home. Anyway.
Just before you take it any further, do you know which troops picked you up in Burma?
There were part of 29 brigades, East Lancs, I believe they were, when I got back.
Those are the ones who found you in the jungle? Those are the ones who found you in the jungle?
Yeah, well, actually, I walked into them. They were on a patrol, and they just sort of picked and stopped me. But by then, I wasn't even bothered if I'd been picked up. You know, I'd reached that stage, it's just a case of, you know, North Star, that sort of idea.
Just apathetic.
But anyway, that was it. That was the end of the line, because, of course, I was evacuated immediately and to the rest camp in Peshmari, up in the central province, and then down Bombay, Circassia, and then to the rescue in the Mediterranean.
Did you take part in the Sicily landings? No, because they'd already...
Yeah, well, what happened... Oh, not in Sicily. Sicily was where the boat was that I picked up, LCH-282. She'd been refitted for a headquarters ship. It had 40 telegraphers on board. And anyway, I was put in charge of the radio on that, and I wasn't very happy about things, really. Fed up. Probably war-weary. But anyway, I took this boat up to Maddalena, you know, after we'd fitted in Sicily. And this must have been late December 43, because we were in Andrea, 22nd of January. But, I say, the dates really meant nothing to me by this time, other than the fact that the dates that I do remember were Anzio. But, anyway, we went up to Maddalena, ready for going to Anzio. You know, this is where they were congregating. And that's when I tried to change with this bloke from one of these U-class submarines, but he wasn't having any combined operation. But anyway, eventually Anzio came up. We all went across there. We landed. I landed at Yellow Beach in the Terno with a beach party.
In the Terno?
The Terno at Anzio. Anzio and the Terno are like Scarborough and Filey, you know, that sort of business. The village alongside there. Yellow Beach I landed on in the Terno. It's adjacent to Anzio. In fact, there's a map of Anzio, I think. And anyway, after a couple of nights on there, you know, it was bombarded, and we had these flame carriers coming up, Tigers. I was eventually taken off the beach again with the screaming dab-dabs and the dysentery back again. And anyway, from there I was sent to Ajaccio in Corsica, to American Field Hospital there. And they more surveyed and said, you're useless out here. So I went to Bastia, to the naval place there, to Naples, and home. When I arrived home, of course, I was sent straight to Dartford Hospital, when I arrived there, I was on a stretcher, of course. I had one of these tags on my arm, and it had got foreign invalid on. I always remember going into this hospital, and this nurse, she looked at me and picked it. She said, "Did you speak any English?" I said, "I am English." "Oh, sorry." So with that, I was in Dartford for a while, and I went to a farm for another month, and then I was sent home. And, of course, when I arrived home, my wife and mother, her mother, they took one look at me and sobbed their eyes out. Because by then, I had put some weight on, but I was 7 stone 12, and they weren't very happy about it.
We've got in front of us the book which you referred to earlier. It's called Soldier Sailor, and it was compiled by Geoffrey Sanders, or Saunders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S, in conjunction with other members of the bombardment units, and it was published by the Bombardment Units Association. And in this particular book, on one of the maps at the back of Burma, you've put down some information giving dates of your own experiences in Burma. And we can see from this map that you were captured inland from Mung Daw.
That's right.
In the Arakan on the 17th of May 1943. That you escaped from Bamo.
There's a holding camp, that's right.
B-H-A-M-O, further inland to the east or southeast, from which you escaped on the 12th of June 1943. And then you were eventually picked up, you said, by Americans on the 28th of September 1943, again in the Arakan, on the mainland opposite the island of Akyab.
That's right, yeah. Long.